Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to show number 175 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat, I'm host for today's show, and today's guest is Scott Gould, and we're going to be talking about handshakes and what we can learn about engagement from them. As I say, I'm Jo Moffat, I'm today's host, and I'm MD and founder of Woodread, and at Woodread we work with clients to help them use their brands to engage their people using the techniques and methodologies that marketeers use with brands to engage external audiences, but we use those same techniques and approaches to engage employees and prospective employees and create healthy internal cultures. So Scott is our guest for this afternoon, Scott Gould. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Jo. It's nice to be here for, obviously, 175 episodes. That's impressive work.
Yeah, I can't claim credit for having done all of them. Most of them, we sort of split them, the other Jo and I and a few other guest hosts as well. But thanks for being on the show today. Before we get in to talk about handshakes a little bit more, can you give us a little bit of an overview of yourself, a little bit of an introduction, briefly?
Sure. So I've had quite a potted portfolio career, like many people. So my work started out doing web design as a teenager. Then I went to social enterprise when I went to college. Really enjoyed that. I went back into media. I was a TV producer for a while. Then I went into more entrepreneurial and started consulting. And then I started a conferencing business, which was very fun. And a quite successful social media conference. And then I went into, interestingly and quite peculiarly enough, I went into church leadership, and I was a minister. I was, a church pastor for a number of years before I went back into consulting, which is where I currently am at the moment. So I've got quite a mix. I've worked public, private, and third sector. So it's I've had probably a more winding career thus far than most people. It's been quite fun.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I'm interested in your background, and I think what will be particularly interesting to try and pull out for our listeners today, as we talk particularly about your topic, is the transferable experience from having worked as a minister for a considerable number of years. You know, what are the sort of similarities and experiences that you can bring from that actually can apply in the commercial workplace? And I'm sure that's some of that you're going to be bringing out. So I think that will be very, very interesting, because the commercial experience is valuable, but it's also about what insights can you bring that perhaps people who've not been in that environment can actually find valuable. So I should look forward to that. So it's all about handshakes, though, and obviously not so easy to do on the radio, physically and visibly, but we'll have an audible handshake if we can. But so I'm curious to understand, really, how your take, really, on engagement in terms of your take on what we can learn about engagement from a handshake. So do you want to just explain where that comes from a little bit, Scott?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've always been someone who's tried to make sense of the world by turning it into a framework. So I'm one of those guys, who's always looking to find some words that rhyme, that make it make sense, or find a 2x2 matrix somewhere. And I was always fascinated by the way that people connect with ideas, with each other, products or brands or stories. I was interested by what separates the things that we do connect with and the things that we don't connect with. Mm-hmm. And it seems, and I was, as I was thinking about engagement, and thinking about what the word engagement literally means, engagement means to interlock. And it actually comes from an old French word that was used in jousting. Right?
Oh, really?
So engagement was, yeah, so engagement was the moment that these two lances would hit, you know, boom. And,
mm-hmm.
and so now we've got the engage. So gauge was like a gauntlet.
Okay.
Engage, to gauntlet together. And so I thought, right, so something here about interaction. And I've actually got a number of metaphors that I use to describe engagement, but it seems that the handshake is the most relevant one because it's the one that all of us do. And actually, you know, I talk about it's like a handshake. It's actually just like a conversation as well. And the idea is that when you shake someone's hand, which is the same as when you have a conversation, you put your hand out there or you put an idea out there.
Mm-hmm.
And once you put your hand out there, or in a conversation you put your idea out there, someone needs to take their hand and meet you halfway and respond to your conversation or respond to your handshake by meeting you with their hand. And of course, if someone doesn't do that, there is no handshake and there is no conversation. It's simply a one-way, it's simply someone shouting, or someone waving their hand in the air like some Nazi salute.
Yeah.
But if the two people come together and they both take each other's hands, then they can be shaken, or in terms of a conversation, the two people keep on backing and forthing. You have a conversation or you have a handshake there. So it's any process of collaboration, any process of co-creation. But I think mm-hmm. a handshake's just a wonderful picture, and certainly it's more memorable than some of the other metaphors I've come up with, which were
right.
successful.
Perhaps a thought, actually, because I know you don't just work in the UK, do you? You've worked internationally as well. I'm probably showing my ignorance here, but is a handshake, is it something that's done all over the world, or are there some countries, some cultures which just don't do it?
there are cultures that don't do it, and there are cultures where it's actually offensive to do it.
Really?
A great example is I was in Pakistan some years ago. So the thing with when I talk about engagements like a handshake, the first stage, if I begin with the first stage, is what I call the invitation. That's where you put your hand out. Your hand is available, and someone can look at your hand and decide, I like the look of that, or I don't like the look of that, and they shake it or don't shake it. You can't force engagement. It's an invitation to engage. And
right.
I was at an event in Pakistan, and I quickly learned that one does not put their hand out to shake the hands of Muslim women, particularly traditional Muslim women, particularly when you're in Pakistan, which is a Muslim country, because of course, in that culture, women do not have any physical contact with men at all. And so
no,
I remember I was shaking the hands of the men, and I came to the woman, I put my hand out, and she said, sorry, I don't shake your hand. And what I learned was I would politely bow and nod my head. I'd put my right hand over my heart. So there was a sense of bowing. It's kind of humble gesture, but I would not shake that person's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that was culturally, something that I'd missed the boat on. I think it's relevant that in engagement, often what is an invitation to you is not inviting to someone else. All of us will look at someone and think, I would not have that job for love nor money, yet someone else has it, maybe out of necessity, maybe out of love. And so I think it's always interesting that what is an invitation to engagement, what is the initial statement, the messaging, the invitation is always culturally, or not just culturally, but preferentially decided. Someone's preferences are different to someone else's preferences. In marketing, and you'd appreciate this, of course, because what you do is you take marketing tactics and apply them internally. But we talk about what is your proposition, what is
mm-hmm.
your product, what is your offering, and some people go, well, that offering is not enticing to me. So Yeah, so the first stage of engagement, I talk about the invitation, and that to me is engagement as enticement.
Right.
So if we talk about employee engagement,
I was going to say, what does that mean from in terms of inside an organisational perspective, in terms of employee engagement? How do you extrapolate that?
Yeah, so in employee engagement setting, you know, we might talk less about the product proposition, but certainly at a very basic level, what is the job role? What is the definition of the job here? What are you asking me to do? What will it mean for you? What will it mean for me metaphorically to work at your organization? What is the compensation package? And importantly, why is this worthwhile work? Why should I want to do this? You spoke at the beginning, Joe, about you know, it's helpful to kind of learn from people who are working in a non-commercial environment. And for me, I've worked a lot in church or in social enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But, my experience is that actually finance is always the most basic level of motivation, and that the moment that you really want to motivate talent in any way at all, competitively, you have to go beyond money and offer some kind of meaning in the job roles that you are hoping to fill, or in the environment that you nurture.
So your first stage of stretching out your hand, the invitation, is not just, right, here's the job offer, here's how many hours, here's what you're going to be doing, and here's what we're going to pay you. That's almost comes before all of that. This is just taking that onto the next stage in terms of answering that question about, well, why is this worthwhile? What's it really mean to be doing this job?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, utterly. All of us will have ourselves, if not, we will know someone who has very recently turned down jobs because it wasn't about the money. The money didn't concern us. It was because there were other things about the role that just did not entertain us or draw us in or entice us. It did not fit with our values. It did not feel it was part of a good career progression. And contrastingly, all of us will have ourselves or know people who have taken on jobs where the pay was below par, but the meaning was of such relevance to us that we took the role despite the inferior pay. It's ludicrous to think that money is the only thing that matters.
Yes, and of course, in vocational professions, those things are particularly evident, aren't they? And it's very easy to sort of identify those. But of course, that can be as important in a non-vocational working life too, can't it?
Oh, completely. So the best book that I've ever read on employee engagement doesn't even use the word employee or the word engagement.
Uh-huh.
A book called Gung Ho. It's part of the 1 Minute Manager series. I'm sure listeners are familiar with 1 Minute Manager.
Yeah.
Gung Ho is about team building and about about leadership of teams. And it's broken into three parts. And the first part is all about worthwhile work. Why does your work matter? Why is your work relevant? It's about the vision and it's about the social meaning of your work. And that is the first thing that needs to be provided. And it's summarized in what's called the spirit of the squirrel, right? So it's got this wonderful kind of the spirit of the squirrel. That's the first point. The second point is actually the way of the beaver, and the third point is the gift of the goose. It's wonderful. It's kind of inspired by North American literature. It's absolutely beautiful. But yes, the spirit of the squirrel, and the point is that the squirrel does the work that the squirrel does because the work is worthwhile. Because if the squirrel doesn't gather its nuts, it will die.
Right.
And so how is your work worthwhile? So it's really important that we understand that when we're looking to engage, the very first thing is, what is our invitation? And also, does our invitation make sense? Is our invitation clear? Is our invitation understandable? I mean, I've got a great example of this, which is called the church plant story.
Go on. What's that?
So as I said, I was a minister for some years, and in the church, we were starting another church. And often in church language, when a church starts another church, it's called a church plant. The idea is that you plant a church in a new location. So you're in one area of town and you're planting, quote unquote, a church or a congregation in a new area of town.
Right.
So every week, knowledge, updates would be shared on the status of the church plant, and parishioners were being encouraged to donate towards the church plant, and how good for the city the church plant will be, and how good for the area the church plant will be. But of course, all of this was delightfully entertaining for someone who started coming to the church who was not from a Christian background. And with great curiosity, I was trying to understand why a plant could do such powerful things for a city, and why a plant so much money, and why a plant was worth moving across city for, or changing cities for. And of course, that was the point, it was such jargon.
Yeah.
That someone from the outside just thought it was literally a plant.
Well, as indeed did I when you said you were going to tell me about the church plant story. So there you are, you see, fuck me into that as well.
It's a silly story, but it shows how often we are unclear about what it is. So the invitation sets out the expectation and the direction. Just what and why am I asking? What am I asking? Why am I asking you to do it? Be very clear about it.
Yeah. So in that really absolutely plays to the first of the Engage for Success four enablers, doesn't it, which is all around having a clear strategic narrative about your organization, a leadership team who can clearly articulate that narrative so that people understand and know where the business has come from, where it's going, and therefore can get a sense of their own purpose in that. So the first stage is the invitation where you stretch out your hand. What's the second then?
So if I stretch out my hand to you, and when I stretch out my hand, what's going on in your mind is you're deciding, do I want to take it or do I not want to take it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's something that's going on there that's now cognitive or emotional. We don't have time to go into that, but there's something that's going on inside you when I stretch out my hand. And if that process is successful, you will take my hand. And we all know that when you take your hand in a handshake, there's what's called the grip. Both hands come together and they grip. And the grip is very important because we want to get a good grip. And when you don't get a good grip in a handshake, it is so plainly obvious and uncomfortable to both parties. You know what I'm talking about. You know, when
very
you get the wet handshake.
Yeah, very, very disconcerting, isn't it?
Oh, my. It sends shivers up your spine. You get the wet handshake, and it's quite an intense moment because you get a wet handshake, and now you need to determine, is this because the grip was bad, or is this because that other person only gives wet handshakes? So then, do I squeeze hard and try, or do I go soft to match the wetness? Do I say, oh, that was a mistake, let's try that again? And then you also get the times when someone is overtly strong in the handshake, as in they're overcompensating now. They really squeeze, or there's that power play where they take your hand and they twist it so that their hand goes over your hand vertically.
Yep.
Or they might twist it so that your hand goes over their hand vertically. So you've got all this going on. The grip is actually quite an interesting moment, and it's about where's the power in this relationship, or are we equals?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so what I think what you would like is, what I'd like in that grip is to be equal. And so the grip is about the interaction. It's about the experience. What's it like to work here?
Right.
If we go outside of the work context for a second and look at something that's very popular and relevant right now, which is using a mobile phone, particularly the iPhone. The iPhone has just released its new software, iOS. And there's a load of talk around the experience design or the user experience. This is not about what functionality can it achieve, but how does it achieve the functionality? So they've just recently changed the way that the screen unlocks, the way that you unlock the phone. Mm. The result is the same, that the phone is unlocked. But how it does it is very important. And some people don't like the way that it's doing it, the how, the method. And so the interaction is often not about the what, it's now about the how. What's the method? What's the values? What's the culture of this workplace? How do mm-hmm. we get things done here? And very particularly, when things are done here, do I feel like I'm an equal, or does the power belong with someone else, or do I feel that I have too much power here? So let's look at three scenarios. Let's say I don't have, let's say that in this experience we're not equals, you and I shake hands, but I very much feel that you're squeezing my hand hard, I feel that you've got the power in the relationship. Well, that means that I will probably feel like I lack a certain degree of autonomy in this relationship. And that will make me feel less engaged because I now don't have the autonomy that I'd like in the job to be myself, be my own person. There's that delightful book called Drive by Dan Pink where he talks about what people are looking for is autonomy. People would like to have autonomy. Doesn't mean that you now don't give them boundaries. In fact, boundaries are very important. People like clear boundaries. But if the balance is unequal and I've got too little autonomy, then I won't have the space to actually be me, and I will feel stifled in this relationship, and I won't feel like this is a pleasant experience. The how is not very delightful here. To micromanagement, for instance. Well, contrastingly, on the other side, if we shake and I feel that my handshake's too strong and I, as the employee, have too much autonomy, I now feel that there's no sense of boundary here. Maybe I'm overqualified for this environment. There's not the structure that's needed to get things done. All of us have worked in or with organizations where it was a little bit like ask about face, to use that phrase, and we feel like I'm the one here who's the expert, and I feel that I'm having to put in too much now.
Yeah.
And things aren't well organized enough. The culture here is just too disorganized, and I can't work here because there's no order in which I can get things done.
So there's as you say, it's all about reciprocation to get that balance right. I mean, it's interesting. We've been doing some work lately with one of our clients where we've been talking about trust and this, and we're recognizing that, and you have to, in order to trust people have to know that they are trusted, and if they are trusted, then they act in a more trustworthy way, and there's a sort of mutuality about the concept, which inevitably is reciprocal, isn't it?
All of this research that's coming out, and indeed most of us, I think anyone who's listening to this, has known these things in their gut for decades, probably anyway, to the point where I almost struggled preparing for this interview because so much of this stuff to me just sounds so bleeding obvious that I often feel like, and that's the problem, is, go into an organization and say, right, it's really important that that people trust each other. And you think, why should I have to say this? Why am I? This seems so darn obvious. And the thing about handshake is that a handshake is so obvious, and yet we go through the steps, we go through the process, because it's bonding, covering those bases. And actually, what I would assume is an obvious thing, that we should be equal, sometimes in a handshake, I'm not equal.
Okay.
Classic common sense is not common practice.
No, sadly not, unfortunately. Yeah, that you do feel, don't you, that surely it's blindingly obvious, but unfortunately it isn't always. So, okay, so we've done stage one, we've done stage two. We've only got 5 minutes left to talk about stage three, Scott. So where do we go? What happens after we've invited and we've reciprocated and we're both holding on for grim death?
Well, I think all of us, will not be surprised to know that the third stage is that we actually now shake hands, as opposed to our hands just staying there in limbo. Our hands now go up and down, and this is where we have engagement, and I call it engagement as empowerment. And the reason why it's empowering is because a handshake is actually a co-created product, the same way that a conversation is a co-created product. In conversation theory, you have stimulus and response. Based on the stimulus, we have a response. Based on the response, we have a re-stimulus, and now we have a co-created conversation. The same way with a handshake. I put my hand out, you take it, but if I start going up and down and you don't go up and down, we cannot have a handshake. If both of us go up and down together, we have a co-created handshake, and it's beautiful and it's glorious, and you know, we feel that we've had a really good time. This is now where I differ from many other people. There was a podcast a few weeks ago, actually, a radio show a few weeks ago, where the woman was talking about how engagement is an outcome process, whereas I think that engagement is actually the process, and that the outcome is connection. The purpose of a handshake is not the handshake; it's to connect two people together. It's to create a bond. It's a social act that signifies to each other something about us, whereby we can bond. And the point of engagement is that we engage so that we can be connected. Engagement is like a pulse. There are times when we are more engaged, and there are times when we are less engaged. There are times when we're handshaking, and there are times when we're not handshaking. But just because I'm not having a handshake with you doesn't mean that I don't have a connection with you. The same way, just because I'm not chatting to a long-term friend right now, I might not even talk to them all year, doesn't mean I'm not connected to them. I might not be very engaged with them at the moment, but I certainly have a connection. And so engagement is a process that builds connection. Engagement goes up and down, which is very natural. And it's natural that in a work environment, people will have times where they're very engaged and times where they're less engaged. But just because they're less engaged doesn't mean that they're not as connected or as bonded to the role. The same way that with my wife, there are times when we feel more in love or feel less in love, because it's just whether we're really busy, whether we're getting to have date nights together or not, but the connection is still strong between us. This is where engagement now goes beyond engagement. It becomes so powerful that it survives the vicissitudes of temporal engagement and goes something far longer lasting, and I believe that's really connection.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. And so if we take that analogy or the framework or the model and apply that to a workplace, you're not necessarily then saying that people are necessarily, it's not necessarily linear. People may be doing different bits of it at different times. Is that your point really, Scott?
Completely. Reid Hoffman wrote a book recently called The Alliance, where he describes the future of work. He talks about tours, like a soldier would do a tour of duty. There are inevitably going to be times where I am really engaged around a particular task, and then there are times when I take a step back and I rest, and my engagement and my contribution is not as high, but I'm still really connected. It's just that I can't be fully engaged all the time. And this is far more like the rhythms of life and far more like the rhythms of a gig economy, where I have times where the tap's turned on fully, but other times where the tap is on a trickle. I'm still connected. It's just that the engagement has to decrease naturally because I can't live at that high level all the time. I think that's far more meaningful to talk about. So we get this.
You would almost say that it's more realistic for a corporate organization, or it's unrealistic rather for a corporate organization to expect to continually be building and growing engagement. Actually, they should be better recognized the rhythms and that we have are entirely natural, and actually they don't necessarily mean that they're failing.
Oh, well, and you know this, but customers, in a marketing sense, you can't always get them to give more and more and more. You've got to give some time for the ground, for fallow ground, for it to rest and relax, and to come back again in the future. It does. And when they're less engaged, they're still connected, It's just that their interactions at the moment are lesser, but the bond is strong nevertheless. That's
got
important.
That's the most important thing, which leads us very nicely to say that we've completely run out of time. So, Scott, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
I think you summarised that at the end without me needing to ask you to. So thank you for that. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for being on the show today, Scott. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.